Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Happy Tuesday, everybody, and welcome back to the Fenway Rundown presented by Mass Live. I'm your host, Chris Cotillo. In a minute, I'll be joined by Chris Smith, who covers the Red Sox alongside me at Mass Live. We're going to talk about one of the best weekends of the season for the Red Sox, who just took 2 of 3 from the Yankees. We saw on Sunday night, Michael Wacha shove for 7 innings, Rafael Devers homered, and best of all, a 2-hour, 15-minute Red Sox-Yankees game on primetime, which you don't see very often. Some reinforcements coming back for the Red Sox, not just Michael Wacha, but also Kike Hernandez, Rob Refsnyder. Seems like Matt Strom will be back soon, Trevor Story, some other guys. So the Red Sox are getting healthy at the right time, about 45 games to go. Still an uphill climb to make the playoffs, but we're going to get into, do we think they have a chance or not? And do they have a chance to actually break in and play October baseball or not? It's Tuesday. The Red Sox are in Pittsburgh, and Chris Smith is here with me on the Fenway Rundown. We're going to get to a few different topics that we have been talking about between ourselves, but felt like it would be good to bring into podcast form this week. Red Sox just took 2 of 3 from the Yankees over the weekend after a big one-game series win over the Orioles on Thursday night. So the Red Sox here suddenly won 3 of 4. They are, you know, not... still not, you know, very close to playoff contention, but they're still in it. And on August 16th, being in it, I guess there's something to be said for that. So I'll ask you the question, Chris Smith. Do the Red Sox have a pulse at this point?
Yeah, so I wrote it before. I think I wrote it on Thursday. It was Wednesday when they lost their second straight to the Atlanta Braves.
Mm-hmm.
I said, if they're not dead yet, they might die in the next 4 days because they haven't been able to do anything against AL East teams, and they're about to play Baltimore and then the Yankees. However, they got the Yankees at the perfect time because the Yankees stink. Like they didn't even score a run last night. Their offense is dreadful right now. Mm-hmm. And so
the worst 30 games winning, over 500 team ever.
By winning 3 of 4, I guess that keeps them in it. However, it's difficult because you have, you know, several teams ahead of you. You know, it's just not just one team that needs to, you know, do bad and you need to do good. You know, it's like you've got, you know, Cleveland or you've got, you know, Toronto in that last wild card spot. Actually, I think that the Rays and the Toronto Blue Jays are what, tied for 1 and 2?
They're tied. They're tied for 2 and 3.
2 and 3, yes. And, you know, you got Seattle in that first spot. And so then you've got, like, so you have to beat, you have to overtake, you know, Tampa Bay, Toronto, or Tampa Bay, Seattle, or Toronto, Seattle. And then you have to overtake Baltimore, Minnesota, and Chicago. And if I was the Chicago White Sox right now, I would fire Tony La Russa and motivate that team, and they would probably get it. They would probably be so fired up. They would get a wild card spot easily because they have the talent, right?
Yeah. And they're just a video that went viral that I was just seeing of a fan screaming at him to put in Adam Engel as a pinch runner. And it took a fan in the 8th inning or 9th inning screaming at Tony, and he actually did it. And
yeah,
so that's, I guess, where they're at.
Like, he was sleeping on the job, and I did just see that video. However, you know, that just goes to the whole fact that they're underachieving for a second straight year, right? And, like, if you know, it happened with Toronto, like, right after they fired their manager, it just gave that team a little bit of a jolt, right? So if you do it, you've got 40-something games left. I would think that team would squeeze in and be one of the wild card teams, but because they've got the talent.
Right. They always have. And, you know, they were the favorite in that division heading into the year. If you look kind of around the teams that are, you know, right around the Red Sox in the standings, you're talking about the White Sox, who are three games ahead of the Red Sox, is a team that should fire their manager. And the two teams right below the Red Sox in the American League standings, the Rangers, who are 4.5 back of the Red Sox, and the Angels, who are 6 back of the Red Sox, they both fire their managers. Detroit, who is another underperforming team, they fire their GM. Obviously, the Red Sox are in a different, you know, boat than all those clubs. And I don't think Alex Cora or Chaim Bloom are on the hot seat. We will get to that. But just kind of in the American League, in that middle of the pack, you know, you're looking at a lot of teams that have already made big changes, but you're saying, you know, they're not dead yet. To me, it is that same issue. If you are, you know, seventh in the American League, you are, or seventh in the wild cards, which puts you at, you know, 10th in the AL out of, you know, that group. I think the White Sox, they're not going to see again. Minnesota, they see for three more. Baltimore, they see a bunch more. Toronto and Tampa, obviously, they play a lot. In Seattle, they're done playing. But you have, you know, you're 3 games back of the White Sox and the Twins. You're 3.5 behind Baltimore, and you're 5 out, you know, with basically a month and a half left. To me, it just feels like, you know, if it was one team you were chasing, like you said, you might have a chance to overcome 5 games in that span. But to ask all of these teams, especially these teams that are playing against each other, you know, that means one of them's going to lose, as Alex Cora says, right? But also that means one of them's going to win on any given day. And when it's such a crowded mix, you know, the math just might not work out, even though the Red Sox have, you know, played a little better lately. So I'm not sure what the playoff probability is from Fangraphs. I've seen it down to like 5% or something in that range in the last couple of weeks. To me, it just seems like unless they get really hot, and hey, they might have a chance here, 3 in Pittsburgh, 3 in Baltimore. I know it's a team ahead of you, but it's a team that, you know, they traded some pieces at the deadline. They've actually played well since then, but it's a team that, you know, you should be able to at least, you know, go head to head with. And these next 6 days on this road trip could be, you know, a valuable stretch for them to pick up some ground.
Yeah, I mean, but you were the one that tweeted out it was good that they were playing a little league team last week, right?
In Kansas City. I'd like to address that officially. That wasn't about Kansas City as an organization. That was about one inning where they threw the ball around and the Red Sox scored 2 runs. And of course, Twitter's not the place for context. So I deserve all the egg on my face for the tweet. I went on Kansas City Radio, donated to their charity, apologized. It was actually, you know, fun to hear from so many Royals fans at the end of the day. But it was about one inning. It was not about the organization. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, that's great. No. However, they lost 3 of 4, right? To the Royals. And it's like, you know.
But it was hot.
You would expect that they would go in and win at least 2 of 3. They need at least 2 of 3, but they're more, you know, they'd be better off to get 3 out of 3 here at Pittsburgh. I mean, Pittsburgh's not a good team.
They need to sweep the Pirates, who are 45-7.
And you know, and that isn't a sure thing, you know, because we've seen them play well and then we've seen them regress. And so, I just don't know what to expect from this week. I think they're going to have trouble with the AL East teams down the stretch, such as, you know, especially Toronto and Tampa. Baltimore's giving them trouble this year, so it should be an interesting weekend. We'll see.
And, you know, I think that's a great point that, like, they are the type of team, at least in the last couple months, that has really fallen into trap games. You know, it's like you get in, you know, if there's a trap series in baseball, right? Like you take 2 of 3 in Houston and during a really emotional stretch, like you trade Christian Vasquez, win that day, you know, you make some other moves, everybody's really stressed out, you win on deadline day, and then you go to Kansas City, you know, probably feeling good about the team, and you lose 3 of 4, you know, or something like that. And then you know, like this weekend, we can all say it was a great weekend. They, you know, Fenway was fired up, close games. They held the Yankees down. I thought Sunday was one of their best wins of the year, the way Waka looked, the way that, you know, Devers kind of broke out of his slump there.
You could go home early.
Yeah, two hours, 15 minutes. That was the best part. Like, you can't lose that momentum now. What do you want to see? And, you know, if we're both saying that the math is not there, that this is it, you know, and then, you know, they might have an outside chance to make it, but let's assume that they don't. what do you, Chris Smith, want to assess in these last 6 weeks? I mean, what are some of the things that stand out to you, you know, when you look at the future of this team and what you want to see? I assume because you love this guy and have longer than it was cool, you want to see Cutter Crawford and see if he can continue, you know, being really good and kind of mark a place down the rotation next year. But who else is there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's one thing. And it's like you have to assess, you know, your starting situation going into the offseason. Do you feel like, you know, Chris Sale is, you know, even though some of these have been, this last one was a freak injury, actually, this last two, because he broke his finger. Right. And
last three, but we'll go with that.
I mean, the first one of those, this group is, you know, I don't know, but we'll just say the last two. So, yeah. So, like, I don't know if you can rely on him going into the year being like, you know, he's one of your starting pitchers.
Well, they can bubble wrap him for the offseason.
Yes. So, you know, you look at it and you've got, you know, James Paxton, you've got Chris Sale, you've got Nick Pivetta coming back. You've got, you know, would they re-sign Waka? You know,
it's going to cost you a lot more than a year and $7 million now, though, I think.
Yeah. So like you've got, you know, the ability to have a good rotation. Obviously you've got, you know, Garrett Whitlock, like what's his future look like? You know, you've got, you know,
bullpen,
what's that?
Bullpen. I mean, just they need to just like stop the charade there. He's just so much better out of the bullpen, especially if this hip thing's going to linger for his career. You know, like I don't understand why.
Why would it linger for his career?
Because it's lingering now, and he walks like an old man in the clubhouse after every game. I mean,
yeah. All right. So what I'm saying is that you've got to kind of like establish what you got with some of these guys, like Crawford, Bayo, different guys, see what you have for your depth starters, even, you know, assess what you have, like the catching situation and the outfield situation. Okay. Right. Like what is Duran? Like, can you count on him next year to be a starter? Mm-hmm. Can you count on Reese McGuire to be the backup next year? Who's going to be your starting catcher? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think you can count on Reese McGuire to be the starting catcher.
No, it's someone who's not on the roster right now.
Is McGuire your backup, or is Wong, or, you know, Hernandez or something? Yeah. You know, like you've got to assess the outfield situation where, you know, you've got to determine, like, you know, like what's Rob Refsnyder? You know, like he's 31 years old, but he's having his best year offensively.
Good fourth outfielder for next year.
I mean, is he a good fourth outfielder, or is he, you know, a 1 year, you know, what do they call that? One hit wonder type thing. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like maybe he isn't a good fourth outfielder next year, but has he figured it out? You know, and he can be a good fourth outfielder next year. You probably have to assess Verdugo in right field defensively, whether he's better in left. Like, then you can see, like, you could bring Tommy Pham back if you wanted to play left. But like, you know, so you have to figure out, like, you have to kind of like assess the outfield and decide, you know, like go into the offseason with an actual plan, because you're going to have to sign free agents in the offseason and do some stuff. Some of their best outfield prospects are, you know, a ways away.
Yeah, they're like 17.
Yeah. So like, you know, it's a difficult situation, but yeah, you got to assess all that. And you have to just pay Devers, right?
Yeah. Well, that's coming at some point.
Okay. So yeah, that's what I would do. Catcher, starting pitching, and outfield. And I mean, obviously they're going to need to redo the bullpen a little bit, but if you have Whitlock, you have Houck and stuff like that going into next year, you have Schreiber.
Yeah,
you have some guys. Forever. Then you only have to add one or two guys, and it obviously, like, it
Davis did help is getting good enough.
Yeah, and it helped, like, getting Deepman's contract off the books, because now you can, you know, if the White Sox are paying all that money next year, so now you can, you know, go out and get another reliever that, you know, you can trust next year.
And one interesting thing where, you know, kind of an under the radar decision, I think that this is going to be, we'll see this tomorrow night, so Wednesday night. Rich Hill staying in the rotation, at least for now, over Josh Winkowski. Winkowski's going to piggyback him. I mean, it's all semantics, I guess, who starts and who comes in as the bulk guy, because sometimes the bulk guy ends up giving you more innings. But would you like to see, well, first of all, what have your impressions been of Winkowski all year? And then would you like to see them commit to him and maybe move Hill to the bullpen? Or how would you like to see them kind of go through that?
Yeah, I look at Winkowski as, you know, down the road as, you know, a fifth starter type guy. He might be end up being more valuable out of the bullpen. I'm going to write something soon. I interviewed him about his contact, like the contact he allows and, you know, putting balls in play and getting outs that way. He probably could, like, his stuff is there where you'd think that he'd get a little bit more swing and miss and stuff like that. And that would help as both a starter or a reliever. So, you know, he'll probably not long if he struggles a couple times. Like, they'll just put Winkowski back and see what he can do and put Hill in the, you know, the bullpen or whatever. But, yeah, I would like to see more Winkowski. I'd like to just see more of him just get some strikeouts too. And so I know that he's like put the ball in play type of guy and he does get outs, but I'd like to see more of, like, you know, him using stuff to get some, you know, swings and misses.
Do you worry about them? And rushing is not the right word, because they've admitted that they needed him out of necessity, Bayo. Do you worry that bringing him up, having him struggle like that, and then getting hurt? I know it's a minor thing and he's, you know, already back and was in Portland on Sunday, but, like, do you worry that this little stretch of, you know, how, after how dominant he was in AAA and AA, could hurt him long term, that they rushed him up like this?
I mean, they didn't really have anyone else.
Yeah.
And Himes,
I understand that, but, you know,
yeah,
point still stands.
No. So, like, yeah. So, I don't think so. I mean, like, he did pitch better when he came out of the bullpen. Who started that game? I think it was Austin Davis was an opener.
Yeah,
one
game. I guess Milwaukee.
He did pitch a lot. He did pitch a lot better than that. The Houston game that he got hurt, he only record two outs or something? But yeah. I heard his stuff looked good.
Yeah,
before the injury.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, maybe those last two gave him a little confidence and, you know, I could do it. I can, you know, I'm a major league pitcher and stuff like that. I already has a bunch of confidence anyway. You know, that was one thing that Katie Morrison had mentioned. And she's not the only one that I've heard that from. I heard from, you know, Cole Caudum, like, you know, he walks around with a lot of confidence and everything. And so, yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about that. Maybe he gets, like, you know, I'd like to see him get more of a chance too down the stretch.
Yeah, that's, I mean, he's a guy that, do you pencil him into the big league rotation to start next year? I mean, probably not at this point, but if he has a good, you know, final 6 weeks in the majors, I don't think he's going to be in the majors. I think he's going to go back to AAA now that there's so many of these guys up, but.
Yeah, that's probably correct.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you probably can't pencil him in, you know, with what he's done so far into the fifth spot of the rotation. You know, another guy that's interesting is that I wrote about today is Brian Mata. You know, like, his stuff is right there where it was, you know, pre-injury. I mean, his fastball is back. He's throwing the two-seamer, heavy sinker, slider usage. And, you know, he's the guy that could compete for a rotation spot next year in spring training. I'd like to see him maybe pitch one or two times, you know, towards the end of the year. So there are guys that definitely, like, I don't know. I heard on the radio the other day that their rotation is in shambles heading into next year. That's not correct. Like, and there's been a lot of false things that have been said, but I just look like they have some good depth. They just need to add, like, Heim needs to go out in the offseason, just add, like, pieces like he has in, like, you know, what he did with Waka this past year, what he did with Hill, you know, just add some guys that are reliable, because you do have your depth stars and you do have some, you know, guys that you should be able to, that should be able to pitch next year in James Paxton and, you know, Chris Sale too.
Right. One guy that I think has been, you know, really taking headlines for weeks now and has been definitely an uneven start to the major league career, to say the least, is Jarren Duran. I know that you love a lot of prospects and you're really high on a lot of guys that come up through the system. And with him, I felt like you never really, really were. But I mean, no one could have expected that the outfield play, I guess, could have been this poor for so long. Again, they needed him out of necessity because they didn't really have, you know, other options. They, for some reason, wouldn't put Jackie Bradley Jr. in center, despite the fact he would have been much better. That might just be reshuffling the deck chairs on the Titanic and moving Jarren to right, where he'd be equally as bad. I don't know. As Jarren Duran's time as the starting center fielder comes to an end, because when Kike Hernandez is back, which is going to be, as we record this, probably, you know, within the next couple hours, Jarren Duran moves to a bench role. It sounds like, from what we're hearing at this point, no roster moves yet, but what we're hearing, and both of us, because I've heard what you reported this morning, is, you know, Duran will stay in the majors and kind of as a bench player. I mean, how do you assess this guy right now? Like, is he just proven that he is not a big leaguer. I mean, people say, yeah, he's young and all that stuff, but he is like 26, right? Like he's, you know, 25, 26. Yeah. And I just, it gets to a point where you can either play in the big leagues or you can't. The thing that I think, as we kind of touched on earlier, that helps him is that they don't have a lot of that upper level minor league outfield depth. There's not a lot coming. So maybe his leash is a little bit longer, but to me, it's just like, there's just too many holes in this game for him to be, you know, a starter in the big leagues.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I wasn't high on it, but I was like, you know, let's hold up with like the minor league stats here. You know, I knew what, like, I've seen guys like Garen Caccini, who was absolutely dominant, you know, through AA and just, you know, couldn't do much in the majors. And then even fell off of AAA, his, you know, when he went back down after his, you know, major league debut. And so, you know, I've seen guys just absolutely tear up the minor leagues and just, you know, guys that weren't top prospects. And then, you know, you're like, well, can they do it in the majors? And they can. So, but, you know, I think that it was probably, you know, center field. He was a second baseman in college. They felt like the speed would make him into, you know, an above average type defensive outfielder, mm-hmm. you know, if he got the reads and stuff and yada, yada, yada. His arm isn't great though, as we know. And so I would think that if he's going forward, he's more of a corner outfielder, fourth outfielder.
Yeah.
I just don't see him as the starting center fielder for the Boston Red Sox long term. Right. You know, can he, you know, we talked about Rob Refsnyder as the fourth outfielder, you know, mm-hmm. Duran's probably a capable fourth outfielder. you know, but he's probably a corner outfielder more than anything. I would say left field, but, you know, cause his arm is that great. And so,
right.
You know, I look at him and I'm just like, you know, they need to make moves in the off season to get starters in there. And like Pham's like, you know, we talked about Pham last off season.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he told the Globe that he came close to signing with the Red Sox too.
He would have been perfect. Like, you know, kind of guy. Actually, I was thinking that the Yankees should have traded for him instead of Benintendi, right?
Yeah.
But he would have probably been better than Benintendi. He plays left field.
Right.
He hits like and he hits for power. I know he's not like a high average guy, but he does get on base somewhat. And he, mm-hmm. you know, he'll hit for more power than Benintendi. So like they may, and the Red Sox had to send a player to be named later for him.
Yeah, they're sending you for him.
But the Royals actually, like the Yankees actually gave like real prospects to the Royals to Benintendi. So
both rentals too. Yeah.
It's kind of funny, like, you know, they probably would have been better off with Tommy Pham. But, you know, so you got to kind of figure out that situation.
Yeah, the outfield to me, I think, is something that, you know, we talk about the bullpen's always kind of in shambles. We know the catching situation, you know, there's obviously going to be holes in the rotation with Eovaldi and Waka being free agents and all that stuff. But the outfield to me is like you have Verdugo and then you have really nothing else behind him in terms of controllable guys. And maybe Russ Snyder.
That's another thing that I keep hearing on the radio is that Verdugo isn't a like they have no major league outfielders. It's like, well, what about Verdugo?
And he's, you know, fine.
He's
had a bad
year
offensively.
Like, he's good. You look at it though, and he has almost hit 300 since I think it was like I put it out like there since like June 6th or something. He's like 290 something. And, you know, and we did see a lot of bad luck, like balls hit hard and, you know, outs like at the beginning there. So that's neither here nor there. He is definitely a major league outfielder going forward. But he, yes, as you said, he's really the only one you can rely on going into next year.
Yeah. And I think I see, you know, especially if, you know, he is okay and proves he's healthy down the stretch, I could see Kike Hernandez coming back on a, you know, short term kind of cheaper deal just because his free agent stock is not going to be very high considering how much of the season he missed and the fact he didn't play very well early on. I could see him coming back and the Red Sox kind of doing a buy low on him. And obviously they like the versatility there. I do think Refsnyder could be on the roster in the future, but you know, if they need to go get some real major league outfield talent and we'll see what happens there. Jaron Duran, if again, I'm thinking, saying we're closing the book on his, you know, time as the starting center fielder for the Red Sox. He's now played 82 games in the majors. That's a half season or a little bit more than a half season. 221 average, 630 OPS. And to me, the most damning number here, and it's like just an absolutely ridiculous stat, is that he has somehow 9 stolen bases in that time.
Well, it's yeah, like, I mean, if you I don't mean, get on, if you don't get on base, you're not going to be able to steal. And
right, but and he's so also like, afraid to steal. So,
well, that I was also talking to somebody else the other day, another media member. I won't name them, but they were saying that, you know, he's not like he's fast, but is he a good base runner?
Yeah,
like that's the thing. Like, so I mean, he's great first to third, first to home, that type of thing. But like, you know, is he a base stealer? You know, I mean, he's quick as anything. He's one of the fastest players that we've seen in the organization for a while. But yeah, can he use that speed to steal bases?
Yeah, and so far the answer has been no, which is, you know, kind of shocking because that's, you know, such a calling card, speed. So, you know, when you look at it, the offense has not been there. The base running's not been there. Defense obviously hasn't been. I mean, I hate to pile on the guy so much, but it's just like you get to a certain point. It's not a small sample size anymore. It's over half a season. And, you know, he'll be, it seems like, on the major league roster for the rest of the year, probably in a backup role. So you said, and just to wrap up, heading into this week, you know, the Red Sox need to sweep in Pittsburgh. And then, you know, let's say take 2 of 3 in Baltimore. Do you think they need 5 wins out of these 6 games? I mean, how do you look at it there?
Yeah, I mean, I would think 5 wins out of 6 games. I think they need to sweep, you know, definitely in Pittsburgh, and 2 out of 3 would be perfect. And, you know, Baltimore, especially when they've, you know, struggled against AL East teams, if you can win a second, you know, multi-game series in a row against right. AL East teams, a third overall, you know, that would go somewhere. So, like, yeah, I would say 2 or 3 would be good. And they got the Little League World Series on Sunday, right?
Yeah, Little League Classic. So believe it or not, they're not playing on a Little League field, but it is in Williamsport.
Oh, really? I thought that they were playing in a Little
League. Yeah, I'm sure they'll get to me. Twitter comments about that. after that stretch, there will be a very difficult one. You come home for 3 against Toronto, 3 against Tampa, 3 at Minnesota. It's how the Yankees will end August and begin. So that is going to be a very tough stretch of 9 games. Chris Smith will have you covered for most of those as I go on vacation. I'm not sure if you do that, but there you go. That's Chris Smith. I'm Chris Cattell. This has been the Fenway Rundown.